Welcome, everybody, to the Shrine of Friendship, the temple of sentiment and idealism where real people meet together every Wednesday morning to get better acquainted.
The Los Angeles Breakfast Club is on the air. Digital audio. Here is your host, Phil Lernis.
Welcome to Los Angeles Breakfast Club on the air. I'm Phil Lernis. I have been going to Friendship Auditorium in the Los Feliz neighborhood of Los Angeles every Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. And it's difficult in an audio-only medium to explain to people who haven't been to any meetings of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, just how powerful they are. Often, I will use a particular photo to help get the idea across. It shows Harry Chandler, the publisher of the Los Angeles Times, shaking hands with William Randolph Hearst, publisher of the rival Los Angeles Herald Examiner. Those two men were more than rivals. They were enemies. They had seemingly nothing in common. And yet, on a Wednesday morning in October of 1930, they were moved to bury the hatchet at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. Moved to put aside their differences and to enjoy one another's company while surrounded by kind, generous people. It's absolutely impossible to take oneself too seriously while attending a meeting at the Shrine of Friendship. In fact, one of my favorite stories from Breakfast Club history concerns a wager famed comic and actor Will Rogers made when he found out that President Calvin Coolidge was coming to address the club in person. President Coolidge was notorious for never cracking a smile in public, let alone laughing. So Will Rogers bet his fellow club members that he could get the president to laugh. On the morning in question, a receiving line formed to meet Coolidge. When it was Will Rogers' turn, he stepped right up, was introduced, shook the president's hand, and then moved along. Suddenly, Will Rogers stopped, stepped back, pushed the person behind him out of the way, and leaned in close to the president and said, "I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name." The president laughed, and Will Rogers cleaned up. For many decades, the Los Angeles Breakfast Club was a fixture on the radio. This program, therefore, is a return of sorts to the days of yesteryear. And there could be no better place to start than that historic visit from the President of the United States, introduced by Breakfast Clubbers who presented restored audio from that 1927 visit to the club in 1975 on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club.
It pleases Sidney and
George W. Retzer, Jr.
to present this tape of recording made at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club in 1927 when President Calvin Coolidge was in attendance. This gift, a rare bit of memorabilia, is made to the present membership of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club in commemoration of their 50th anniversary. The original record was a gift from L.E. Beheimer, better known as Lou, one of the founders of the club and beloved impresario for many years of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. George was in attendance the day the record was made, and he will tell you what he remembers.
It was an occasion I shall never forget when we all sat down with the president and Mrs. Coolidge at the table with me was a beautiful and famous woman, aviatrix Bobby Trout. Charlie Paddock, a great runner who was a 1920 gold medal Olympic winner and one of the very best of all-around athletes. Jim Thorpe, winner of many medals in the 1912 Olympics.
President Coolidge will say a word to you all, and I know that the million listeners in will be glad to hear his voice here at the Breakfast Club.
Chairman, members and guests of the Breakfast Club, not for the purpose of making any extended remarks that the chairman has asked to silence, but merely to give me an opportunity to express to him, to the members of this club, deep appreciation of Mr. Coolidge and myself for your cordial hospitality and for bestowing upon us this emblem of membership in this remarkable organization, which I see bears the horseshoe of good luck, which I understand admits us to the charmed circle of perpetual friendship.
Mrs. Coolidge does not choose to talk. Please leave the recorder on.
That of California's governor, C.C. Young.
As the school is, quiet. This president of the Breakfast Club, I hadn't been told until that moment that I was going to have any minutes at all, and therefore you can see I haven't ammunition enough for 3 minutes. I say just one word. At other times when I have been here at the Breakfast Club, this organization, which we all love so much here in California, and which I have frequently referred to as a unique organization all the world over, an organization that attracts to its board more distinguished citizens of this world than possibly any other organization in the West, I have frequently said that there is no one body where so many men and women of distinction visit as at this Breakfast Club. This morning, we are singularly fortunate. Many distinguished people have been introduced already. Many will be introduced. But when the same morning we have America's, I might say, the world's favorite singer, Madame Schumann Heich, as our guest at the Breakfast Club,
President Coolidge and Mrs. Coolidge at the Breakfast Club.
just like these, my friends, then I think we can say unanimously, we enthusiastic members of this club, that the Breakfast Club of Los Angeles was not founded in vain. I want to welcome these guests here today. That job wasn't given to me. They will undoubtedly be more adequately welcomed later in the program. But my heart is full with gladness that they are here with us. And I, in behalf of the state of California, as far as my position entitles me to do so, welcome them here among us today. Thank you.
That was California Governor Clement Calhoun Young, better known as C.C. Young, and before that, Calvin Coolidge, addressing the club. And very briefly, you heard the voice of Mrs. Coolidge as she called out the club's traditional "Hello, Ham" greeting and received the traditional "Hello, Egg" from all assembled in response. Every week, the Los Angeles Breakfast Club welcomes a different presenter to its program, and the first month of 2017 saw a terrific lineup visit the Shrine of Friendship to speak on a wide array of topics. On Wednesday, January 4th, the club's very own Maurice Terenzio spoke to us about Tiffany Pictures, an independent movie company that existed from 1921 to 1933 in the Los Feliz area. One of the highlights of Maurice's presentation was a short film from 1929 produced by Tiffany Pictures that featured a new member initiation ceremony of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. Maurice himself became a member just last year, along with his wife, Diane. They actually live in Chicago, but come out to sunny Southern California each winter to enjoy the weather and to participate in the democracy of ham and eggs. On Wednesday, January 11th, historian and author Steve Grody took us on a visual tour through the abandoned lots, back alleys, and industrialized sections of Los Angeles to trace the development, meaning, art, and culture of graffiti. Pastry chef, teacher, author, and beloved TV personality George Geary visited the club on Wednesday, January 18th, to discuss his latest book, L.A.'s Legendary Restaurants, celebrating the famous places where Hollywood ate, drank, and played. Silent era Hollywood, graffiti culture, landmark restaurants. For many breakfast clubs, that would be enough for 1 month. But not at your Los Angeles Breakfast Club, where we concluded January with a visit from Middle East market consultant and negotiator Paul Weinman. As a child, as a member of the military, and as a professional advisor, Paul has spent more than half his life in the Middle East. And on Wednesday the 25th, he helped us understand what is taking place in that region today. Later on in the show, club president and chairman of the board, Lily Holloman, will be along to preview what will be taking place this month at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club.
This monthly review and preview of happenings at the Democracy of Ham and Eggs is brought to you by coffee.
I love coffee. I love tea. I love the Java Jive and it loves me.
Coffee, the breakfast of ex-champions. It's not just for breakfast anymore.
When I first started coming to the club, staggering in bleary-eyed at the crack of 7:05, I was fortunate enough to form a friendship with Reverend Barbara Adams during our conversations at the oatmeal station. At first, we would simply compare notes on how we prefer our hot cereal. For the record, she quickly became a shadowy influence upon me, and I now proudly eat my oats with a little brown sugar and a sprinkling of raisins. And our conversations have evolved and deepened. And I truly cherish them. Such is the way with friendship. Sometimes, all you need to get the ball rolling is a bowl of oatmeal. our beloved Reverend Barbara addresses the club each week, taking us down the path that leads us to our continuing adventures in friendship. Join me in giving her a friendly greeting, won't you?
Good morning, Breakfast Club. Good morning. Myrtle told me a joke this morning, but I'm not going to tell it to you guys. You might have to ask her personally, especially the ladies. We don't want to embarrass them. Okay, that's just going to keep you guessing. Now, forget that. I heard on the radio this morning that Los Angeles, and you might not be surprised, has the worst traffic in the United States. We probably have the most freeways in the United States. And the statistics that I wrote down quickly, we each average 81 hours a year sitting in traffic on the freeways. 81 hours, not minutes, but hours. I know Myrtle, she comes all the way from Newport Beach. I live 10 minutes from here. I got all the signals this morning except the one out there. So I hit 10 signals, but boop, boop, boop. That doesn't happen too often. And, oh, yes, okay, I'm going to talk about that travel because I live really close to here. I've always wanted to work close to where I worked, and I usually have, but I was working for Sunset Magazine on Wilshire Boulevard near West Vermont, and it was an easy drive, 8 miles, real simple, no traffic. And then they moved to Sepulveda and Santa Monica Boulevard out there someplace. And I was having to find a way to get there, and especially getting home. But the hardest part was getting home. It was easy, pretty easy to get there in the morning, but at least an hour home, which to me, after having driven 20 minutes for 20 years to come to a place where I had to, have to do that. So I decided and found out that surface streets from Santa Monica and Sepulveda is as fast as taking the 405, the 134, the 10, the 2, blah, 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 blah. So that's what I did regarding that. I also had kind of another thing about, a couple weeks ago we talked about people, famous people we had met. And I had a couple more that I had that when I was working at Sunset Magazine in the marketing department, and I was assistant editor to the marketing department gal, and she didn't want a lot of times go to these luncheons we were invited to, so usually travel events. And so she said, why don't you go? Well, I've seen famous people. I think I mentioned it. I saw Danny Kaye. I think I said that last time, yes. But then I remember I went to Spago up there on Sunset Boulevard for lunch, and there were some of the stars were having a luncheon there. And I think I saw Charlton Heston that close, and another fellow, Michael Wilding or Michael somebody, and I got his name wrong, and he was really a little perturbed. And so that's all I have to say about that. They're laughing. And I had something more to tell you. What was it? Well, when you get to be 92, you forget things. But I'm not 92 yet, so I should be so I should be remembering, shouldn't I? But you're going to hear some wonderful stories today of the history of the L.A. Breakfast Club, and I will just put my two cents in. I joined here in 1998, so that's 18 years, and I've enjoyed nearly every minute of it. And it's so great to see so many people here. And we got down to a lot of people who left for one reason or another. They passed away. They had to move. We were down to about maybe 10 of us. And you can't have a meeting and have speakers with 10 people. So when Lily came in, and Aaron, and all these young folks, whoa! And when I sat over here this morning, I sit there at the first part, and I said to Lily, I says, God, there's that whole table is men. And we used to have a lot of women, but I don't know where y'all came from, but we're glad you're here. So please enjoy hearing more about the Breakfast Club. I've enjoyed it all the time I've been. I shared being chaplain with a lovely woman, Reverend Jackie Johns, who few of you might remember. She's no longer with us, but we have a great time, and so I know that if you join, you'll even have more fun because you'll really be part of it. And thanks for all of you who did join, because you're making this place live again. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
There is a lot to unpack in what Reverend Barbara shared with us there. For starters, we learned that surface streets can be just as fast as freeways. We also learned that famous celebrity Michael Wilding, or Michael somebody, really did not like people getting his name wrong. Finally, we learned that membership of the club had dwindled by the time Lily Holloman discovered the club, and that through her efforts and the efforts of those she brought with her, the club is truly alive again. You will hear other people testify to this, and later in the show, we will ask Lily about what caused her to fall in love with the Los Angeles Breakfast Club to such a degree that it inspired such tireless effort on her part. Every club meeting features a different chairman of the day. The meeting from which that clip of Reverend Barbara came was chaired by Myrtle Nelson, whose voice you heard at the very outset of today's show. If you were to walk past Friendship Auditorium on Riverside Drive on a Wednesday morning at 6 a.m., you would no doubt find Myrtle Nelson sitting in the parking lot waiting for the Friendship Auditorium doors to open. A retired nurse, Myrtle drives from one of the beach communities of Orange County. She leaves at 5 a.m., which gets her here by 6. If she left at 6, she wouldn't get to the club till 8 a.m. Maybe she needs to learn about these surface streets. Anyway, here is her introduction as chairman of the day, as read by the esteemed Los Angeles Breakfast Club Master of Ceremonies, Richard Gilson.
Now let me tell you all about Myrtle. Get comfortable. It'll take a little while. Are you comfortable? Okay. Myrtle is a graduate of the Glendale Community College Nursing Program. She is an ADN nurse degree from Pasadena City College. She did critical care classes. Who cares? But I care. At Cal State LA. Presently, she is knitting hats. Yeah. So knitting, there's a K in there. Knitting hats and scarves for Operation Gratitude. She did me a hat, too, but it wasn't green, so I didn't wear it this morning. Anyway, where am I here? Oh, her hobbies are knitting, card making, travel, and beach. No dancing?
No, I have artificial knees.
Oh, man. Well, anyhow, she has 3 children, 4 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. God, she must be old. Her favorite thing is dining with friends. And family, here's Myrtle!
Today, our speeches are a little bit different. We have 3 different speakers today, and it's my understanding that they're going to be talking more about the history of the club. And so we have a total of John Bevan, Don Snyder, and Rex Link. And it's my understanding that John is going to speak to us first.
Good morning to everybody. While I'm the son of a founding member, my father, Albert Bevan, he was one of many founding members. one of my serious pursuits in my adult life is I'm a quasi-forensic genealogist. Does anybody know anything about genealogy? Raise your hands. Do you know what forensic studies are? Raise your hands. Okay, well, this is what I do. I don't just take genealogy at face value. I actually sit down in a laboratory of my mind, in the theater of my mind, and I connect all the dots. And I've been doing that for some time with the L.A. Breakfast Club. DuMont, Louis B. Mayer, Dr. Hollingsworth, an orthopedist, Warner Brothers, Harry and Jack Warner, for you people that are in the motion picture business, Douglas Fairbanks Sr., Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Valentino, et al. Et al., a little Latin for others. There's a host of these folks. Now, why did they come together? Your history would tell you it was 1925, but it really wasn't. It was right after the First World War. We're trying to reconstitute ourselves within the United States of America. Tremendous problems, tremendous chaos. We're going into prohibition times. Things were difficult. As you know, for that decade, things were not taking off like this. They were taking off like that. And so these people all had a story to tell. What was their story? They sought camaraderie. They got together, smoked big cigars, told stories about camaraderie. In the early days, a lot of them were equestrians. They were out on Los Feliz Boulevard, across from the original Tam O' Shanter, which was 1922, the oldest licensed restaurant in Los Angeles. They gathered together for camaraderie. They came from all walks of life. My father came because he was an outstanding world record athlete. I have pictures behind me with knock, literally knock your socks off. So we talk about stars, luminaries, journalists, governors, senators, presidents. You really have to go back and do some digging because this is something else, the Los Angeles Breakfast Club.
The meeting that you've been listening to took place in March of last year, and it was in fact the 91st birthday celebration for the club. The next speaker you will hear is the musical director of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, Don Snyder.
I had got a call yesterday from Erin, or a text from Erin, and she said, we need to know how many years you've been the pianist at the club. And I was so involved in a couple of things in the office, and I quickly said 15. And then I was sitting here, and I would realize it isn't 15, it's 25. And that's how life goes by us, and that's how this club has changed in all these years. But I got involved, or I first came in contact with the Los Angeles Breakfast Club back in the 50s when I was singing with the Mitchell's Boys Choir, which was doing a lot of work in Southern California and a lot of work actually in film. And we came here to perform for the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. Of course, it was not here. It was in the clubhouse on Los Feliz Boulevard, which I have amazing memories of because I took cotillion there when I was a teenager because I'm a native Los Feliz and spent a lot of time because they would rent that building out, which is how this club was able to sustain itself between the rentals of that amazing clubhouse. And if you've not seen photos of it, I have to say it is iconic. And we've heard that word a lot this morning, but it's truly iconic Hollywood glamour. And if you think of the building that they used in Mildred Pierce for her chicken house, that was very much like this building. It was a rambling California ranch with a cupola on the top and charming rooms and stone and everything that you would imagine Southern California to be. And it was in this great building that people continued this wonderful friendship that John started talking about today. And if there's one thread that runs through this club, it's the friendships that were made here. In the 80s, I was asked to come constantly. I think I came about four times a year as the entertainment. We had a format at this club, and I think Rex will talk a lot about it because his father had so much to do with the creation of this club and the perpetuation of this club, I should say. He was the manager, full-time job, and he truly grew this club to what it was, and Rex, I know, is going to talk about that. But the format they had was they had speakers for about 45 minutes And then they would have, at the end of the day, 15 minutes of entertainment. And then entertainment back in the day was some of the great singers, actors, joke tellers, members of the club that were in the industry that would entertain. So I would come graciously. I was so grateful to be asked about four times a year to entertain for this club. And the pianist that did what I do now for the club was named Frank Coney. Frank Coney started for this club when the club started. And so when I was coming to sing here back in the 80s, Frank Coney was in his 80s. And it was amazing. But you could put anything down in front of him, he could play it. And it was really kind of fun. And I received a phone call in the late 80s, sometime around 89 or 90, that Frank had collapsed at the club. He was at that point over 90 years old. And I lived close, and they knew I knew the format, and they also knew I played piano in addition to singing. So I came in to temporarily make sure the club had some music while Frank recuperated. Well, unfortunately, Frank never got well enough to do this, and within a year was gone. And so I've been playing for the club since 1990. When I first came to play for this club, we had over 175 people for breakfast every Wednesday morning. We had six rows of tables, three tables deep, an aisle, then three tables. And the people that belonged to this club, as John was saying, were the movers and shakers of Southern California. This was the type of membership that we had in the club. People who had founded some of the largest companies within the world, actually, were members of this organization. Back in the day, because the Masonic fraternity was big and everybody was a Mason, on the first meeting of the year was Shrine Day. And we had a double-head table, and then they put a table on the floor. All of this was raised up back in the day. And it would be filled with Shriners, and it was the first official visit of the new potentate for Al-Malaika Shrine, which, of course, is what owns the big Shrine Auditorium downtown. And they would come here, and we'd do a major procession for them. Every year when the Indio Date Festival would crown their queen, we had the Indio Date Festival hierarchy at the queen and her court here, and we did a special thing for that. We did a special thing for the Rose Parade Queen and her court here. This was the place for people to come. This was the place to see people and to be seen by people. So through the years, we've watched the club diminish in size and get to the point, as was said earlier by Barbara, that we had such few people we thought we were going to lose the club. So I personally am so grateful for Lily particularly and the people that she's brought in who have revived an amazing tradition in Southern California, something which those of us who are natives really remember and treasure. But for me to take much more time would be absolutely unfair to you, because I think the person with probably the most immediate knowledge is the son of the gentleman who truly created, maintained, made the club what it was, and that was Harold Link, who was the manager of this club for decades, and his son Rex was certainly intimately involved in that. So I'm going to turn this over to Rex and let him regale you with some pretty great stories.
Lily made a special request that I trace the path my father followed to become manager of the LA Breakfast Club. My father, Harold Booth Link, was born August 5th, 1888, on a ranch outside of Silver City Territory of New Mexico. My parents were married December 13th, 1913, in Lampasas, Texas, where my mother grew up. Two things that he started out with pointed towards the LA Breakfast Club. One was that living on a ranch, he rode horses. He totally failed on getting me to be interested in horses. I wound up being a sailor instead of a horseback rider. But my dad did not have a horse, but a rich Breakfast Club member said, "Ride my horse anytime you want." I remember the horse's name was Sunbeam, and it was right here on Stables next door. The second thing he had to start with growing up in New Mexico is he spoke fluent Spanish. And that worked perfectly for the Breakfast Club. He and Sheriff Biscalus and the lady that built the La Golondrina restaurant downtown, Madame Consuelo de Bonzo, and Leo Carrillo were kind of like a team that spoke Spanish everywhere they went. When my parents moved to California, my father's first job was with the Hollywood Citizen News. Judge Harlan Palmer was a founder of Hollywood. And through him, he got to know Charles C.E. Toberman, another pioneer name in Hollywood. He's one of those that started our famous Hollywood sign that's a bigger problem now than anywhere we dreamed it would be. And through his relationship with Mr. Toberman, my father was the opening manager of radio station KMTR, which is still there. It's called the Hollywood Storage Building. It's on Highland Avenue right by Santa Monica Boulevard, and the towers are still there. So I don't know the details of how my father met Maurice DeMond. But he was the first manager. So things that I remember the most, one is that I had the great good fortune to belong to the Breakfast Club Boy Scout Troop, which the Rangers built the Ranger House with their own money. And my father came home one night and said, we've had a wonderful scout leader come in. He has convinced the Rangers they should have a scout troop. The Rangers put up the cost of our neckerchiefs, which are very fine material, which we had to give back after we left the troop, at our flag. And the Breakfast Club has never made an investment that turned up as much as that scout troop, because this was the Great Depression. And there were 40 boys, I can remember every one. Jack Dempsey came to the Breakfast Club, was so taken. He just told my father, I want you to move the Breakfast Club to New Jersey. He politely refused. Two of the memorable things about on the side at the Breakfast Club were the Hawaii trips and the Mexico trips. The Hawaii trips were on the SS Lurline. And as a kid, I never forget the sailing parties. They're great for a kid. You're all over the ship. Actually, they were stopped before 911, because they became a hazard and a danger, as letting so many people on a ship and they could be hiding and do anything after the ship sailed. So the parties weren't continued. The Breakfast Club met at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel, which was the first big hotel in Hawaii. They had the regular Wednesday program there, just like here. And I remember very well my first ship in World War II. We left San Francisco Bay and we went straight to Hawaii, and I enjoyed so much looking through the long glass. See, we would check in by blinker light, that here we are and we've gone this far all right, before we went to Australia. But I was able to identify the hotel and show all my shipmates that that's where my parents go for when they go to Hawaii. The Mexico trip, the reason I remember it so well is Breakfast Club had their own train, left the station, had their emblem on the back of the last car, the observation car. And when Pearl Harbor came, there was a Mexico trip scheduled about 10 days later. It still went on. And I'll never forget, because my mother and I were left alone, and where we lived, we could see the LA aircraft fire that went off down somewhere near the beach, which they've never explained. My father sent a wire to us and said he had forgotten to pack a coat, a certain overcoat, get it to him as fast as we could by any way we could. So that's what we did. He couldn't find it. He was in Mexico City. And he did not use influence or pull of that hardly at all. But he had a card on his possession from another trip that said, This will introduce Senior Harold Link, who is a friend of Mexico, and any assistance that can be offered to him will be appreciated by the government of Mexico. So we pulled the card out, and he wound up with the inspector, with the Postmaster General of all Mexico, and his coat was found immediately. Another Breakfast Club one I never forget is that I worked on the City Hall East project with the Los Angeles Mall. I wanted to show it to my father. The last time I took him out before he went to the hospital was when the dedication of Fletcher Bowron Square, downtown the Civic Center. Fletcher Bowron was had been a mayor. His widow simply told us, said, "My husband thought so much of the LA Breakfast Club, he's got to be there. He's got to be there." So we took him at the dedication of Fletcher Bowron Square, and I got to drive through the parking structure that I did. Another time, it was, well, I don't think Walt Disney was here, and particularly the Kids' Day, but Walt Disney had this felt Mickey Mouse, you know, how tall it was, and asked my father, "Do you have any children?" And my father said, "Yes." He says, "What?" He said, "Boy, how old? 7. He said, "Then this is his." And Walt Disney wrote my name on Mickey Mouse's foot, and my parents gave it away in World War II when I was in the ship. I don't know what I could do with that. I don't know why they did that. The people that lived in back of us was a lieutenant governor of California, and a little kid I didn't like at all. And so a lot of my toys went to that little kid.
It is safe to say that Rex Link has forgotten more of the history of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club than most of us members will ever learn. If you come to a meeting of the LA Breakfast Club, where first-time guests eat free, don't be surprised if you find Rex Link standing outside wearing an enormous button identifying him as that day's official greeter. And there's always something so appropriate about seeing Rex in a parking lot, for it's safe to say there isn't another soul in this city who knows more about the design and engineering of parking lots than Rex Link. He may confuse you by asking what high school you went to, even if, like many of us, you grew up hundreds or thousands of miles away. It's a mnemonic device he uses. He remembers people's names and faces and details better if he knows what high school they went to. In having had the vision, creativity, and boundless energy to revive the club the way she has, it's tempting to think of Lily Holloman as being our Walt Disney, which of course she can't possibly be, seeing as how actual club member Walt Disney was our Walt Disney. One of the most hilarious functions Lily serves is to fill in from time to time for Dr. Jim Whitney in leading us through our morning calisthenics.
Okay, everybody, let's take a deep breath in and out. And let's stretch our arms up to the sky, the right arm up. Ah! Left arm up. Oh! And down. Stretch our head. Give it a big yawn. Shake it out. Boom! Boom! Cha cha cha! Roll your shoulders back. Whew. And roll your head to the right. And to the left. And now, Actually, I'm really feeling a leg stretch, guys. Let's go out on a limb and touch our toes.
Oh, brother!
If you can. Doesn't that feel good? All right, now for our traditional ham and eggs exercise. If you're new, you'll catch on. Don't worry. Arms up, palms up, arms out, and repeat. Come on, moon, and all that jazz. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba, cha-cha, and all that jazz. Na-na-na-na-na, there's a nightly brawl and all that jazz.
Okay, now let's all be seated and sing along with some songs.
Hail to the chief. She's the one that we say hail to. Lily Holloman.
Where am I supposed to look when I make these announcements? I never know. Just go, okay, directly at Conrad. Okay. Hi, Conrad. Welcome back.
Lily Holloman.
An actress and a producer, Lily first learned about the Los Angeles Breakfast Club while flipping through an issue of the Screen Actors Guild magazine. And in that issue, there was a photo of Red Skelton performing for the club. And she saw that the address was in her neighborhood. So one Wednesday morning, bright and early, she walked on over to the Shrine of Friendship. Lily, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Do you remember what it was that you so immediately fell in love with when you visited the Los Angeles Breakfast Club that first time?
What I fell in love with was the secret bubble of magic that I had discovered in the base of Griffith Park at 7 o'clock in the morning before the city had risen. I felt like I had stumbled across ancient ruins that nobody else knew about.
And then what happened when you visited the Breakfast Club?
So it was this community of people who were doing these crazy rituals that felt like a high school assembly in the 1950s. And this very tactile feeling of community and camaraderie and fun and silliness.
Okay, so lead us briefly through this. You show up, you fall in love with this time machine that you have found. How does one go from visiting for the first time within, I think it was just within a matter of months, you're installed as the president and chairman of the board of the club?
Well, that's not exactly accurate. Within a matter of months, I did join the board, and within a year of joining the board, I became the president and board chair of the club. And quickly upon joining the board, I found out that the club was soon to expire, and I just couldn't let this happen because it was so special, and it already meant so much to me. I love the integration of the generations, the learning that goes on, the history. It was too important to me to let it die, and I knew that in this age of isolation that other people would feel the same way. So I really had this desire to keep it going.
One of the many reasons I'm glad that you felt that way is because too many people gave too much of themselves and too freely of their time to make the Breakfast Club great. And these people were also the people who made Los Angeles what it is. And I feel, if nothing else, we owe a debt to them.
Absolutely. And that's another thing that I fell in love with about this club is that when you go there, you can really feel those people's presence. There's such a sense of history there. And it really connects me and I think the other club members to the city in a deeper way.
Lily, when the club was first formed back in the 1920s, and for many decades thereafter, women were not actually allowed to join the club as members.
That's true.
And now here we are with a woman president.
Insert awkward joke here.
Okay. Lil, what's coming up this month, February of 2017, at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club?
I'm so excited about the speakers we have planned for this month. This Wednesday, February 1st, we've got cartoonist Daryl Van Sitters, who's going to be coming in and talking about the art of Jay Ward Productions. Jay Ward was a cartoonist who created Rocky and Bullwinkle, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, the Cap'n Crunch image, among many, many popular, beloved cartoons.
I'm already have a question.
Yes.
For Jay Ward that I can't wait for. In what service exactly was Captain Crunch a captain?
Well, hopefully Daryl will be able to tell you. I don't think Jay Ward is with us any longer, but...
Oh. I just made it a somber occasion, didn't I? Please, what's coming up on February 8th?
February 8th, LA Weekly contributor James Bartlett is going to be talking about... famous crimes of passion in Los Angeles history that he found in the Los Angeles archives. And he's also going to be signing copies of his book, Gourmet Ghosts 2.
Is that T-O-O or the number 2?
The number 2.
It's a sequel.
It's a sequel to, I think maybe both of his books will be there. And this is about vintage menus in Los Angeles.
So he's going to talk about crimes of passion and menus.
He's just going to sign his book about menus.
So we could call this show Murder and a Meal.
Absolutely.
What's going on February 15th? Will there be any Valentine's Day festivities?
Well, the February 8th one is technically the Valentine's Day celebration as it's crimes of passion.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yes. But February 15th, we have the director of the Griffith Observatory coming to talk about the observatory that we know and love and eat breakfast under every Wednesday morning.
The Griffith Observatory is, of course, one of the real jewels of Los Angeles and was founded by a member of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club.
Indeed.
What's going on February 22nd?
February 22nd, we will learn about another founder of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, Edward Doheny, and his house, Greystone Mansion in Beverly Hills, as Susan Rosen, the president of the Friends of Greystone, come and tell us about the architecture and history of this gem.
Now, the Dohenys, one of the, I guess you could call them, first families of Los Angeles, probably.
Yes.
Was this an oil family?
Yes.
And of course, Doheny Boulevard.
Absolutely.
Named for Mr. Doheny.
Major, right? Major Los Angeles family. So that's a lot of great history to learn.
Do you think that that's how they, you know, they broke the good news to him? Mr. Doheny, we're going to name a street after you. And he said, oh, really? Which one? And did they say Doheny?
That's exactly how it happened.
Lily, you'll be back again next month to preview March's exciting events. But before you go, the Los Angeles Breakfast Club also puts on fairly regularly Sunday night performances. Could you speak about this?
Absolutely. Encore Sundays are a series of shows produced by the Los Angeles Breakfast Club that bring some of the great entertainers who perform for the club to a nighttime audience. On next month's show, I will have a full detail on the first Encore Sunday presentation of 2017.
A full detail. You'll just give us one detail. Month just by one. Month, you will reveal a detail. Like, we can tell you what time it starts, but not what day. You'll have to tune in the following. It's like a cliffhanger.
Well, isn't that kind of from a detective novel, like a detail? Is that a thing?
I don't know what you're talking about.
A detail
about.
On a person?
So anyway, I think the words I'm looking for are Lily Holloman. Thank you for joining us. I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Thank you for having me.
That brings us to the end of this, the maiden voyage of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club on the air. I invite everyone within the sound of my voice and on all the ships at sea to learn more about the Club of Hospitality, the club whose structure is built upon the golden rule, where the Breakfast Club oil can keeps the friction out of life's machinery, where the golden shovel can always dig up something good in the human clay of every person, and where the buried hatchet keeps us from worrying too much about yesterday's disappointments and directs our attention to the work we should be doing today. Visit our website, LABreakfastClub.com. Like us on Facebook. We're at Facebook.com/LABreakfastClub. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. What could be more fun? We're at LA Breakfast Club. Finally, write us at LABC1925@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, especially if you or someone you know has historic information or stories about the club. Much has been lost and needs to be regained. For example, our closing song this month was recorded at the club in the 1930s, but the singer and the song are unknown to us. Again, that email address, labc1925@gmail.com. I'm Phil Lernis, hoping to see you bright and early on a Wednesday morning real soon.
Join us again next month for another hearty helping of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club on the air.
Don't be afraid of the future. All of our plans will come true. How can they fail with love at our side? They'll never fail, we won't be denied. All the world's a symphony for you and me. For life is a song, let's sing it together. Let's take our hearts and dip them in rhyme. Let's learn the words, let's learn the music together. Hoping the song lasts for a long, long time. Life is a song that goes on forever. Love's a refrain can never go wrong. Let's strike the note Mendelssohn wrote concerning spring weather. Let's sing it together and make life a song. Life is a song that goes on forever. Love's a refrain can never go wrong. Let's strike the note Mendelssohn wrote concerning spring weather. Let's sing it together and make life a
your announcer, Pete Handelman. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.